The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is realistically handling the risk of the new. And our guests for today's show are Lieutenant General Harry Rudedge, who is the director of Deloitte & Touche LLP and also is the chairman of Deloitte Center of Network Innovation. Morning, Harry.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Very good, sir. How are you?
Very good, very good. Thank you so much for accepting the invitation. We'll have a lot of fun here.
My pleasure.
Great. Now, we also have Will Pelgrin, who's the Director and Cybersecurity, Chief Cybersecurity Officer with New York State Office of Cybersecurity and Critical Infrastructure Coordination of New York State. He's also the Founder and Chair of Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Good morning, Will.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. How's life at your end?
It's great, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Now, we also have Mark Weatherford, who's the Director and Chief Information Security Officer for the State of California Office of Information Security. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Sunjo.
How are you, sir?
We are doing well in California.
Yeah, you always do well in California, don't you?
Well, I don't know about always, but we try.
Well, that's good. So the topic here is around security, but at the same time, we cannot be always cautious. We have to be curious as well. So where's that balance is what we have to look at, and how does an IT leader go about handling that balance and keep running the business forward or keep moving the business forward or keep delivering value through IT? So, Harry, let's start with you. So we see the newer technologies are basically promising that it can stretch the boundaries of what IT can possibly provide. Now, at the same time, we also say that we cannot be jumping on that bandwagon without recognizing and fortifying ourselves against the security risk that may inherently bring. So, and also the security-related issues are most of afterthought in many cases. So that at least being told to us that that's an afterthought. Is that truly the case?
Well, in many ways, it is the case, and I think we've been living with that. There's no change in many ways. I'm reminded that the Internet was actually invented within the United States Department of Defense, and security was an afterthought in that regard. It was built as an opportunity for engineers to exchange information, and so there was a trusted environment from the beginning. Over time, though, we've really learned that security is critical. And fundamentally, it's always more convenient and less costly for security to be built in rather than bolted on later on. But technology advancements are going to probably continue to stress capability first and security somewhere later. That's something we just live with. And in critical areas, however, security will need to be continually addressed through risk assessment and management.
Now, Will, you hold the fort from a security standpoint in your organization. Is this something by design that we will keep that as an afterthought and we'll deal with it later, or is this just the way we have not been able to make enough noise or make people aware that this is equally important?
Well, I think we're getting better, but I agree with the general that we have a long way to go. You know, all too often, whether it's government or business, it's time to market a new functionality versus the security aspects of those that drives the deployment. But how much new functionality do we really need? I think we need to question, you know, from a business perspective, what's really the core of what we need to get done. You know, all too often we have software that has so much functionality that only a percentage of that is really utilized. But more importantly to me, in understanding the risk aspects of this, is the full disclosure of that. What is embedded in that software? Understanding what that functionality is helps us identify what the risks are and the challenges in order to protect it. just real quickly, we had a situation here. We issue a lot of advisories and alerts, not only in New York, but across the country. And we make certain assumptions determining whether or not an advisory is warranted. We had this vulnerability that we had learned about in a software, and our assumption was that nobody would be running this aspect of this software, so we were not going to issue an advisory. However, we did an examination of our systems internally within even my office and found out that the software, while was not intended, was enabled that functionality throughout every one of our machines and therefore was very vulnerable. And because of that, we issued an advisory out throughout the whole country. So understanding what we have is probably a fundamental process to ensure how we can protect it.
So, Mark, what have you seen going happening at your end? Is that something that you share a common sentiment here?
Yeah, and I guess I would agree with both Harry and Will on the fact that in the past, you know, security certainly has been an afterthought as new technologies come to market. I do think we are seeing a little bit of a change in that, though. And specifically, something that comes to mind is smart grid technologies that's, you know, it's becoming fairly prevalent now. There are a lot of security, folks engaged in the whole development of smart grid technology. So I think it's something that we've learned a little bit from in the past to say, okay, we're going to roll out a completely new technology across the nation. We need to make sure we get it right. Now, I'm not saying that they have it right, but I'm saying that they have certainly engaged security people, the right kind of security people, in the development of that technology. One of the things that we do here in California, one of the things that we're working on, is we're actually placing a security engineer within our enterprise architecture organization. So as we design the future enterprise IT infrastructure for the state of California, I have somebody in that group, somebody participating, so that as decisions are made about architecture and about the technologies that we're going to implement within the environment, we can raise security issues at that time as we're designing and developing, so that we don't have to go back and relook at it at some point, after we've already rolled it out.
Now, Will, I'll have a question here for you. Like, CIOs always strive to get a seat at the table, at the board, so that they know what's going on. Does a CISO get the seat at the table along with the CIO when an IT discussion or a new technology is to be adopted within the organization, or even contemplation or the ideation stage is there?
And I think it's, all over the board on this one. Unfortunate in New York State that I am an appointed position with a peer of the CIO. So we both report into the governor. So we both are at the table at the same time, which I think, at least in New York State, that works extremely well. In other areas, I don't believe that the voice is being heard. I think it's still down too far within an organizational structure. And the fear that I have based on that is that the decisions that are being made, whether they're at executive level, are being pushed down within the bottom levels of the organization. So I don't believe security wins all the time, but I do believe that in order to make an appropriate decision, the people who make those decisions at the higher level need to at least hear the concerns. What are the risks? What are the vulnerabilities? What's the threat and the likelihood, and then the consequences that are associated with that in order to make an informed decision? Looking across the country, I say that probably way too often that's not at the table, at the place that it should be at.
Now, Harry, you've been a federal CIO before. How did you look at this given role of CISO, and when you were trying to adopt a new technology or something which in your view would change the world, you did not want anyone to come and put a damper on it. Is that how the security was being viewed? Not you in particular, but I'm just saying since you were a CIO, we can get your perspective.
Sure. Well, when I was a CIO, matter of fact, appointed the first time, it was the result at the federal level of legislation that was put into place in 1996. It was the Information Technology Management Reform Act. It was more commonly referred to as the Clinger-Cohen Act. And that act across the federal government stated that a CIO needed to be appointed in each federal activity, and that that CIO would report to the agency director. So automatically having a seat at the board table, if you will, of the federal government activities. So I was first appointed as a CIO of an organization in the federal government in 1996. So that's been a number of years now, I guess 13 years, and as Will and Mark have added, the fact that that's now filtering down from the federal government experience of here's the way we need to lead information technology and information security at a level that has a voice at the table of the general, the admiral, the agency director, or the now the governor, I think is starting to permeate down through our state and other activities.
So, Mark, do you have any other sentiments about this stepchild syndrome?
Yes, I do, and you know, I have maybe the unique experience of having been a CISO in two states, both appointed in Colorado and appointed here in California. We've recently reorganized our government structure here a little bit in California, where I now report directly to the state CIO, Terry Takai. And I will say in our instance it works very well. I think Terry depends significantly on me for advice. And my experience is that any good CIO recognizes the value of a CISO and recognizes that a lot of the decisions that they make, it's better for them to have the input of a CISO who understands the implications and the risks associated with evolving technologies. I just think, you know, my experience, like I say, is that a good CIO will recognize that. I haven't, like Will said, you know, it's all over the map at the state government level as far as the relationships between CISOs and the CIO or the other folks in the IT governance process. But it seems to me that the CISO's influence has risen fairly steadily over the years. We're probably not where we need to be across the board right now, but we're getting a lot better, I think.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and look at the way the new IT, the Web 2.0 and the cloud, et cetera, it could be compared to a house where you have only one door initially when we had the command and control style of IT, and it was heavily guarded, and it was a fort, literally. Now we are bringing out these new paradigms of computing and new technologies, which are saying that I will drill a bunch of windows in the same house, and there will be multiple points of entry and exit. So how safe does it leave us? And at the same time, we always wanted to have an airy house and not a dungeon. How do we eat the cake and have it too? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Evol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.evol, A-V-V-A-L, evol.com. Visit today.
Are you ready to grow your business? Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show with your coach, Rick Corrado. This entertaining talk radio program will bring you the tools to help increase your business. You'll learn sales success, time management, lead generation, business development, life balance, and much more. Rick Corrado is here to help you take your business to the next level. Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show, heard live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjay Gall.
Welcome back. So we could have a preference of living in a dungeon or the one which is an airy house, just a bunch of windows in there. And if you could compare that to the old-style technology management, which was command and control, centrally controlled with no other entry or exit allowed, so we definitely had a very secured fort, but then there was functionality which wasn't available in terms of mobility and anytime, anywhere, anything type of computing. With that being introduced into the system, we are drilling and you know, installing windows where there are multiple points of exits and entry, which will, of course, bring some level of vulnerability. But we also want those windows. So how do you eat the cake and have it too, Will?
Thanks. And you know, just going to your first question, do we want an airy house with sunlight or do we want a dungeon? First, I think the barn door has already been open, and I don't think it'll be closed. You know, and I think we have to recognize the fact that we're already in an airy house, which I personally think is good. But we have to adjust accordingly. And if you just look back just a few short years ago, I mean, this is how fast the transformation occurred. Just a few short years ago, we had a very well-defined perimeter. We knew how to protect the perimeter with firewalls and protected devices out there. And I used to say it was dissolving, but it is dissolved. It is gone. And if we went down that path of how to protect our infrastructure by looking, you know, just what had happened in a few years ago, we would be going down the wrong path at this point in time. With the dissolving of that perimeter, it really becomes one now our job is to protect the data, and that data is now resident with each and every one of us. We have that because we're so mobile. All our remote devices are with us. Social networking sites, the Web 2.0 issues that you raise, all of that has enhanced our ability to do our jobs, made our lives more effective, efficient, and hopefully more fun. But in order to do that, I think we have a responsibility, and I think that responsibility is a step is first to understand where your data is. And sadly, in a recent study by the Poneman Institute, 62% of the study respondents confirmed or were unsure with their off-network equipment whether it contained any protected, sensitive, or confidential information. And that's just sad. I mean, you know, so our first job is really understanding what is the data that you have, what's your data that you're responsible for, where is it stored, who has access to it, when do they have access, and how do they have access to it, and then how does it get transported or transmitted physically or transmitted electronically. And then understanding all of that, you can put controls in place in order to ensure that it is as protected as possible. I'm not the sky is falling type of person, and I believe that our jobs as CISOs is really one to be facilitators, not impediments on this. But I think it's absolutely essential that we set acceptable use policies and understanding the challenges and risks associated with that airy house that are critical in order to make sure that we've done our due diligence to protect it as much as possible. You know, with the windows and doors that you described in your house, you still want to make sure you have an alarm system that's in place in case there's an intruder that comes into that process. So I'm all forward in favor of it. I think, however, we have to do it with our eyes open and be vocal about what are the safeguards that need to be put in place in order to make sure we're as safe as possible.
So, Mark, in your view, would you have put a guard, you know, like a speed guard on it, the speed at which the CIO wants to install Windows? You would want to first make sure that the entry and exit has got some sort of an alarm system of sorts, like Will mentioned. What is your way of dampening the speed whenever required without having CIO feel that this person is this role of CISO is more counterproductive?
Well, you know, if everyone in the world could hear what Will just said, I think we would be better off. You know, and he talks about the where is the data, who has access to the data, how's the data being stored, how's the data being transmitted. If we understood all of that, we would be 90% of the way toward solving all of our security problems, because that really is the issue right now. So I step back a little bit, and, you know, when asked the question, would I rather have the airy house or the dungeon, from a pure security perspective, I'd rather have a dungeon. But I understand that it's about the business. It's not about security. And unfortunately, a lot of security guys and security people haven't evolved enough to say that, you know what, security is about risk management, and we know that our environment is changing, so we can't have the dungeon. Unfortunately, the dungeon is gone. As Will said, the perimeter is completely gone. So it's no use in even considering that any longer. We have to figure out how to help the business be more productive. That's what security's job is today. And a lot of we really need to change the security mindset that it's all about security, because it isn't. Our job is to help optimize business to do their job better. And, you know, we raise concerns when we need to and when we have to. But, you know, ultimately the decision is the business on you know, how they're going to deploy things. Our job is to give them the tools and the advice to do it properly.
Now, what Will and Mark just said, Harry, from your viewpoint, how is the real world? I mean, they are, of course, both realistically, you know, handling the respective forts, but in the rest of the world, is the CISO thinking like that, or they are more the one coming strong with their security hammer?
Well, I think the real world is the fact that the reality of what Will and Mark have just wonderfully described is a reality. It's we are learning now in the real world that we must embrace the fresh air of the technology in our homes and workplaces for our continued growth and prosperity. That's the business that security must enable, and what Mark described. And even in our nation's most critical operations that involve areas of national security, they have recognized also that the doors and windows of information sharing and collaboration must be opened widely. With access allowed only to those neighbors and visitors who are welcome. And that's the challenge of open doors and windows in today's environment.
In an environment where we want to progress at a warp speed, the IT leader would want to go at a speed that nobody's seen before, but don't want to get fired. He wants to get gold medals or raises. But if there's a security breach because of which there is some huge loss, then CISO gets fired. That's not fair. Well, what do you think?
Well, first, again, I'm very fortunate. In New York, we started very early in promoting the fact that this is not about guilt or blame, that this is about learning from the past to improve the future, and that if anyone asked me, you know, are we 100% secure, if I had said yes, they should fire me, because you can never be 100% secure. So there's always this balance between risk and benefit and what the vulnerabilities are. But it's really one of due diligence. It's one of ensuring that you've taken all appropriate steps to make sure that, based on the information you know today, because these threats and these vulnerabilities are changing every single day at lightning speed. So in order for you to feel comfortable, I want to be in a position where I said, I've done everything that I could have done to be as prepared and as secure to not only detect it, but then to mitigate if something did occur. When the best companies in the world, and including from government and private sector, have had compromises, we have to sit back and say, you know, it will happen to all of us at one point or another in our lifespan that we will have and experience a cybersecurity incident. So it's really one, again, if somebody's doing something illegal, you go after them. But a lot of this is human nature, human factors that are going to occur. So learn from the past, create a safe haven, make sure that, because if you don't have a safe haven, guess what? You're not going to even know about the breach because they're going to hide it on you. So you need to have that environment. And that's got to be at the highest level. So nobody should get fired because there's been a breach alone, unless there's some either a criminal nature to it or literally a negligence associated with that. So it's really about that fundamental education and awareness. You know, I'm always, you know, when I get asked by the governor, you know, are we secure today? And I think that's just, you know, the common question to the security guy. And I always feel like there's probably when I hesitate, and my response doesn't give a comfort level, but it's one that says, you know, yes, we're as secure as we can be based upon we know what's out there today. You know, we're doing our due diligence. So I think it's essential that we keep that at the fore out there that 100% security is not attainable, and at some point in time, we're all going to get hit.
When governor asks you, Mark, would you purposely hesitate or give him or her a confident answer about the state of security? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and we'll talk.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjay Gall.
All right, Mark, what do you think would you have said to your governor if he had said? Would you have given him jitters?
Well, you know, I don't think that I would intentionally give him jitters, but I certainly would not want him to have a false sense of security that everything is fine. As Will said, you know, there are just simply too many variables to ever say that you're 100% secure. And, you know, in an organization as large as the state of California, we have, you know, over 220,000 employees and scattered, you know, in organizations all across the state. You know, those 220,000 employees provide a lot of variability. So, you know, you have to go back, to, I think, to the original question, is it fair that people get fired? Well, no, it's not fair that people get fired, but I think that the people that do get fired are the ones that are perhaps not as honest as they, as honest or as realistic as they should be with presenting the state of the state, if you will, about about information security within their organization. If you go around saying that everything's fine and you're 100% secure all the time, and then you do have a problem, it doesn't look like you've done your due diligence, and quite frankly, you haven't.
Harry, you could look at it from two standpoints. One is that if you were to look at it from your past engagements as CIOs, you would expect a behavior from your CISO to give you a realistic response. And from the other side, since you represent Deloitte and they also do vulnerability tests and, security-related audits, what would you compare a CISO's answer with when it comes to you looking at it from a CIO side and a security vulnerability auditor side?
Well, certainly from an IT security perspective, working in this area is not for the faint at heart. And this is challenging and demanding business where both the rewards for success and the dangers for failure can be significant. And I think with the discussion that we've had already today and the knowledge I have of working with Mark and Will for years now, you can see the confidence and the competence that they have in the work that they do. So, building up a trust of who is responsible for IT security in the respective enterprise is very important. And I have found that IT leaders normally deal with three considerations in their daily lives. First off, there's the responsibility. Certainly, they get that heaped on them for running effective and efficient information networks. That just becomes part of the job description. So the IT leader goes into the job knowing that they're going to be responsible for a lot. The second area is the authority. And quite often, this is an area that is lacking, and IT leaders can't always make or affect the needed changes that they want to, either because they don't have the ear of the responsible activity for making the change, or they don't have the resources, whether it's people or money. But then the third element, you seem to get that an awful lot, and this is why IT security is not for the faint at heart, is the accountability part. IT leaders just really need, they are going to receive large quantities of either praise, blame, or neglect. Those sometimes routinely come with the job in IT security. So those aspects, this is not work for the faint at heart. I think CIOs, governors, leaders of organizations look to the confidence, the competence, the experience, and the trusted relationship of the advice that they get from their CIOs and their CISOs. And there's nothing that can replace that trust factor.
Now, while every other aspect of IT is something which we make as customer-centric, do we also try to do the same thing with security? Because we could be living in that paranoid world that this is going to happen or that is going to happen. But then if we are doing everything for our customers, do we try to poll our customers to see what level of risk are they willing to take versus the functionality that they could get? So, Harry, do you have any thoughts on this one?
Well, sure. I think that question depends on the customer's actual business. From my past military and current private industry experiences, levels of acceptable risk are understandably much lower if you're involved with national security or safeguarding what I would refer to as the crown jewels of your organization. And part of the job in helping your customers to manage their risk is knowing what the organization's crown jewels are and what the threat to those are and the current state of security in your organization's enterprise.
So, Will, would you go out in your world and look at polling actual customers to see and accordingly set expectations and or benchmarks within the organization of how much security is enough?
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, you asked the question was what level of risk the customer is willing to take. My answer that I wanted to give was a lot more into their impacted. And then once that, there's been an incident that occurs, I think that level risks changes of what they would tolerate. So, because all of us want to make sure that our data is protected. And I think, you know, government as well as private sector, but in particular government, because I think there's an expectation from the citizenry to that we have a responsibility to protect the data that's entrusted to our care. So I think it goes to what, you know, the General and Mark and I have all said in the past. It's about making sure we inform everybody about what are the challenges, what are the potential risks out there, and just communicating that to all. I mean, if you go out to our website, we're very clear on our website. The first thing you'll see is what's the cyber risk that's going on right now? What's the level that we've rated our state relative to either from a threat perspective or a consequence perspective? We provide very concrete information as to what's going on relative to that. And then secondly, again, going to that responsibility that government has to notify individuals if something did occur, you know, to make sure that you provide them with the information for them to take appropriate steps to further protect and to mitigate any situation that may occur. You know, we took a stand here in New York. While we have a breach notification law, that law applied to New York State residents. And our policy was that regardless of who the individual was, if we had a record that was accessed, even if it was a citizen from California, we would notify them because it's the appropriate thing to do. It's the responsible thing to do. And just to deal with it. I mean, you know, to hide it just doesn't make sense. It's the time to really to do plain talking, to talk about the truth out there and make sure people are aware of what's going on.
Mark, in your view, is there ever a point that we could reach where we are truly meeting the customer's security-related needs? Do we know what they are? Or do we have a level at which we would say, you know what, this much security is enough?
I go along with what Will said a little bit. First off, you know, the citizens of California are my customers primarily. So I would say, back to the original question, what's the level of risk that they're willing to accept? I would say probably zero, you know, and that's because they don't necessarily understand in general what a lot of the risks that we face are. And, you know, going back to who the customers are, you know, the citizens, they have to share information with the state whether they want to or not. So we are custodians of, you know, just a vast amount of information about everybody. And so, like Will said, we have, I think, a much higher level of responsibility for providing protection for that information. So there's a lot of education that goes on. And, Will's got a wonderful website where they do map out all the risks and what's going on within the environment. We find ourselves, in many cases, doing exactly what Will said, is that even in instances where we have information about a citizen that that may have a compromised computer or a compromised identity, you know, we try to figure out a way where we can work with that citizen to let them know whether in fact it's related to government activity or not. We get all kinds of information on a daily basis from all different kinds of sources, and sometimes, you know, we just get information that it's our duty as good stewards to share that information with citizens. So I would say it's a little bit of a balance, but you know, we try to do to be as open and transparent with the risks that we are facing and that our infrastructure is facing as we possibly can with the citizenry.
So you use the word that you could only the customers would always want zero risk or zero security threats. That may not truly be the case, and that could be partially because you may not be awarded the resources to be able to do that. So could you go back to your governor and or other stakeholders that say that I am supposed to promise my customer, who are also your customers, who vote for you, are looking for zero risk? You're not giving me funding.
Well, you know, certainly that's part of our job as a security executive, is to build the case for for the security program. But, you know, quite frankly, and this has been my experience in government in the two states that I've worked at, you know, there's limited resources, and it comes down, truly does come down to risk management. You know, what is the state willing to accept? And you know, the governor doesn't own the budget. The legislature owns the budget. So when you're talking about funding for really anything, the legislature is balancing what the needs of the entire state are. You know, and I'm always cognizant of the fact that, you know, if I need money for security, somebody is making a decision somewhere that perhaps that's another police car or a police officer somewhere, or that's another hospital bed somewhere, or, you know, that's another, you know, another person on a social program that might need assistance. So it's a constant balancing act, I think, from a funding perspective on which risk you address.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And let's look at the evaluation process, which is utilized in government and even in private sector. There may be a common denominator there with respect to identifying that for a given technology, which may be the upcoming newer and which is going to, you know, install Windows in that dungeon, what is the level of risk and what's the level of value so that a true positive business case could be created for it to be funded and the new technology could be adopted. But it has to be a little more scientific versus something that has been read off the internet and created. So what is that process which is being utilized today? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Self-leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So question for Will. To start with him, IT leadership is trying to evaluate different technologies all the time. You get a seat at the table along with that individual and, of course, other people who are stakeholders in those technology adoption to figure out whether this is going to create many more windows which are going to create more vulnerability at the same time. What value will that bring? Is this process standardized? Is this a science yet, or we are still – it's an art form?
I think it's a little bit of both, and let me explain. And first, in – that conversation relative to evaluating the new technologies, I think the first question that we pose is to ensure that the business process is pushing the technology and not the reverse. Sometimes we get caught up into the sexiness of the technology, and I think we really need to step back and to ensure that there's a fundamental need for that technology and make sure it's a program-driven one, not a technology-driven one. Once that's said, you need to look at what the information you have at the time you're making that analysis. I mean, there are classic vulnerability risk assessments, you know, where it balances the risk versus benefits, you know, the vulnerability times threat times consequence. All of that looks at a scale of whether or not there's a vulnerability and then a threat as to the likelihood of exploitation of that vulnerability. And then even if it's exploited, what are the consequences that could occur if exploited? And then are there alternate ways to minimize the risk associated by allowing that new technology to be deployed? So there's this multi-level approach, and it's, you know, so there is a methodology, there is a science to it. And the reason I said it's a little bit of both, because I don't think you can take out subjectivity out of this process. And I think if you do it just by the numbers, we'll be back into the dungeon, because I think that is the where you need to interject your own basis into this. Because there are ways to minimize risk. There are ways to deploy things that the numbers are just going to come out the wrong way if you do just the multiplication table here. And just one other point that I'd like to make is that this needs to be a continuous process. Even when you're looking at new technologies, you're looking at it in a context of a point in time of what the threats that are known and the vulnerabilities that are known at that time. Those threats change. So we may give an opinion relative to a new technology being deployed based upon what is the information that's available to make that recommendation. 2 days from now, we could find out a new exploit. We could find out a new vector that we did not anticipate, which would have changed that risk analysis dramatically. So this can't be just, you know, you do it at the front end and let it go. There needs to be a continuous evaluation relative to what the threats are out there as you go forward to ensure that those threats didn't introduce, you know, a higher likelihood of exploitation and then a major consequence based on that. So it's a little bit of both. Going back, I think that there are methodologies out there, very scientific ones, but don't lose sight of the subjectivity. I think it's absolutely essential. You have to put this in context of the real world.
So basically, Mark, you'll get paid the big bucks if you had very good gut feeling and very good hunch.
Well, I don't think that's what Will was saying, but I think, you know, kind of go back to what we talked a little bit about earlier. How does IT leadership go about evaluating newer technologies? You know, it's I can't overstate how important it is that security is part of that process. You know, so there's a whole lot of IT people around the organization that are looking at new things and considering new technologies and developing new applications, and unless security is involved with the development, with the, you know, at the initiation phase, at the requirements development phase of some of these projects, you're going to miss something, and you're going to end up with a technology or with an application or with a solution or a service that in fact may have capabilities that are unintended and undesired. Let me give you a quick example. I had in a previous job, a couple of my security guys came to me one day and they said, "Hey, we've been evaluating this new technology and it's really cool and we think it'll really be good for the organization." And I said, "So what business problem does it solve though?" And they didn't have an answer. It didn't have a business solution. I mean, it didn't have a business applicability. So just because there's new technologies out there, they really need to be business-driven. It needs to be something that the business desires, and it's not just something that security is all about. There should be a business requirement for it. And you know, as we do roll these things out, security just has to be part of the decision process as they are going forward.
Harry, would you see from both standpoints, so if you were a CIO, would you like to see your CISO using the hunch and or gut feel to give you an answer? On the other side, if you were a vendor, would you like to come and say no? And if you were to come in and say, you know what, I've got a little bit of hunch and a gut feel about the security or what this is going to be, and would that be bought by a CIO and or a CISO if they were sitting on the buying side?
Well, I think it gets back to your point of this being an art and a science in evaluating these new technologies. And when I think about that, I probably put in the art form area the most dependence and credibility on trusted relationships between government and vendors. That certainly helps me. These reputable vendors and trusted partners will not sell you technologies with known shortcomings and vulnerabilities. And when I was in government, and certainly now that I'm in the private sector, I think the trusted relationship art form is very, very valuable. It's something that our firm at Deloitte builds its reputation on and has for years. When I think about the science parts of this and getting to your question, I think about to employ a group of knowledgeable individuals, whether those people are internal to your organization or external. Mark and Will talked about this, and those individuals have to know the business well enough to thoroughly test the products that are under consideration. So, independent validation and verification is sometimes required to ensure that what's being offered to you really does stand up to the test and the measures of what you're trying to purchase for the organization, and I would say another part of the science form of evaluating newer technologies comes from equipment that meets certain standards certifications that are required in the marketplace. So having a knowledgeable body of individuals who know what standards have to be part of anything that is purchased is also part of the science form of this. So it very much is an art and a science, and having the proper individuals and the CIO and the CISO chairs certainly is critical to making sure that you evaluate the technologies properly.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Harry, Will, and Mark, for sharing your thoughts about how we can realistically handle the risks while, of course, moving on our path of continual improvement and growth. Now, we all understand that security is very important for us and also at the same time is growth, innovation, and ongoing success. So IT leadership has to ensure that it delivers value to the organization and keep a balance between curiosity and caution. Key is to be able to continue on this path of continual improvement while all along managing risk. Is this balance in place yet? Not sure, and it still looks like it is some sort of an art form, which of course in an ideal world we would like to convert into a science. We will get there, hopefully, and in the coming days, time will tell where we get with this overall security management and a balance between security management as well as the growth of the organization. If you have any thoughts on this, please send us to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.